This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 14th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is Exteriorization and Interiorization. This lecture is 61 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
Morning. The material which we have to cover has to do with the various aspects of auditing itself. It also has to do with the various aspects of theory itself and of living itself. I'm going to give you a talk this morning on exteriorization, the whys, wherefores, and et ceteras of exteriorization. Interiorization and exteriorization are two subjects which have never before been well studied subjects in the field of the mind or spirit. They have simply happened. They have not been studied. Get the idea. We occasionally would have someone who couldn't leave his house. And perhaps only to that extent was man interested or aware of the subjects of interiorization and exteriorization. Of course, some lovesick young fellow has often been interested in the problems of exteriorization, such as his young wife from a doting family. Trying to get her out of the family and into his home was a major problem to him, which was, by the way, perhaps in a fair way of ruining his life. He could not accomplish the exteriorization of the daughter from the family and the interiorization of said wife into his own home. The various pulls and thrusts of attractions and repulsions of humanity are themselves of vast interest to humanity. And it could be said, really, that completely aside from delusions and relusions and reconscious impulses, to use technical terms, that exteriorization, interiorization is the total subject of aberration, difficulty, and success in man. It could be said, and this with some truth, you understand, this is not one of these total truths, but with some truth, you could add up practically every activity of man under the headings of exteriorization and interiorization. With some truth, we could do this. It wouldn't be totally true. But you could stretch the points, you know, stretch it out of shape a little bit and use some of this logic I was giving you the other day, whereby I demonstrated to you that all you had to do was have a concatenation of data of comparable magnitude, just a parade of this data of comparable magnitude, and you would have logic. So, of course, we could take exteriorization and interiorization, and by taking some of these data of comparable magnitude, take care of the places where it doesn't really cover the activities of man and make it all very logical. Nevertheless, we don't have to strain at this subject to this degree to actually bring to our consciousness the fact that these two things are certainly the most important factors in living. They might not cover everything, but they are the most important factors. If a person were to acquire the ability and choice of interiorization and exteriorization into any and all fields of life, any and all activities or positions, he would, without the slightest difficulty, control his entire environment. It goes that far. Now, probably all that man really knows or has known, pre-Scientology man, about all he has known of the subject is expert techniques to interiorize people. And he has known this. The money problems of the world depend on these two things. Somebody putting up enough attraction for an inflow of cash. And the inflow of cash occurs so that the individual himself won't have to interiorize. Now, this sounds very peculiar, but it's nevertheless true. Somebody out here puts up an advertisement, and he says, buy Chippos, the most wonderful handy Jim Dandy razor blade cracker known to man. And everywhere one goes, he sees this sign, buy Chippos. And everywhere he goes, and eventually he pushes the sign away and tends to exteriorize from the sign by putting a two-shilling piece into the subject of Chippos. So he doesn't need a razor blade cracker, but he buys one. This, you might say, is a repulsion from the potential interiorization into the signs. You see this? They put out anchor points of one kind and another to keep themselves out. They create then space with various types and kinds of anchor points so as to have a distance between themselves and those things into which they might interiorize. They interiorize themselves then into their own space rather than to other spaces and masses. By doing what? By fending off, creating, repelling, so on. Now, this looks a little bit far-fetched, that an individual would repel himself from traps with cash, until we realize that in countries which are more civilized and have less justice, you can usually buy yourself out of jail. Usually. Of course, you get one of these barbaric countries where they say, well, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and that's justice. Code of Hammurabi, so forth. These fellows then say, there shall be no slightest possibility of any individual being able to put an anchor point into the jail and keeping himself out of it. Follow me? In a more civilized country where they have things worked out, they say, well, we won't take your body. You can put some other anchor point in there. Get the idea. Actually, this tremendous emphasis on the fact of we must have your body is the lowest dregs of savagery. It's very, very close to eating. The youth of the United States and some other nations in the world today is amazed to discover that the civil authorities and the military authorities together combine to make them put their body into armed services. That's a compulsive interiorization. Of course, man knows how to do this very well. He has it all worked out. Government has an anchor point known as a cop. And the cop walks up and taps the fellow on the shoulder and has another anchor point known as the judge. And the judge is supposed to sit there, deaf usually, and listen to quote evidence, unquote, by witnesses, quote unquote, who weren't there or who might have been there. And then in passing by various rulings, which are usually misread, justice. Passing the fellow's body on into a small cubicle. And when we put it out this way, it all begins to look very asinine indeed. Because if he does put his body into the cubicle, he's going to make the individual less aware. And having made him less aware will take away a great many of his responsibilities toward life in general, which are the only things that made him civilized in the first place. So it is a barbaric society that always takes your mock-up and puts it. The only mock-up you've got at the moment, and these barbaric societies will stick it in a cubicle or put it in an electric chair, do something like this with it, you see. Well, this is to convince you overwhelmingly that interiorization cannot at any time be prevented if they say so. Well, I don't know where these fellows get the idea that that's a civilized activity. It isn't, because it breeds crime, corruption, disloyalty, upset, and all the rest of it. A fair look at the situation would tell us at once that interiorization is not the answer to crime, but quite on the contrary, is the answer to more crime. See? But man knows how to do this very well. Now, the young man gets to be 18, 19, 20, something like that, and he really is thinking about getting along in life. He's thinking this is fine. He's going to get along in life. He's going to make things somehow. He knows a girl. He's got a job, and so forth, and somebody comes along and taps him on the shoulder and says, your body will now appear at such and such a place, will be examined. We'll only take it in case it's a very good body. And, of course, if it has double pneumonia or something like that, why, we won't take it. But it's got to have at least one sound lung. You've got to be able, it's got to be a perfect condition. It's got to be able to walk a considerable distance before it flops on its face. And we're going to take this body, and it's got to appear now in another suit of clothes about which you have no choice at all. And it's got to walk up and down with a rifle in its hand about which you have no choice. You probably know better weapons than this Craig Jorgensen or Lee Enfield or Springfield or Grand or some other crocked up weapon that is very little use to anybody. And they're actually very ineffective weapons. And it's got to walk up and down. It has no choice of weapons. Now it's got to defend itself with this weapon that we give it, whether this is a good weapon or not. And this weapon has to be fired according to certain rules, whether they are good rules or not. And if somebody comes along in another suit, another body walks up in another suit, you are supposed to shoot that body. And your shooting of it is again not in the realm of your choice. This is insanity. You put it that way, you know. Of course, we dream it up and dress it up in all of the foo-fara and hoop-de-doo of the recruiting sergeant and all the rest of this stuff, and we give it all kinds of lettuce and gold lace and talk about the ethical and moral responsibilities and home and mother and all kinds of things like this, and it doesn't sound quite so insane. It sounds like the very thing you should do, even though to date it has never protected a single nation. Even though to date it has never done anything but destroy happiness and lower the morale, ability to produce, and civilization of Earth. Yet this is the thing to do. Interiorize the guy into an army or a uniform. See, that's the thing to do. Oh, he knows that's the thing to do. If one man knows one thing, it's interiorize him. And if you were to go around and couch a major social problem to people such as the Reichstag or somebody, you know, and you were to lay this thing out and you were to say, now, these are various solutions to the problem. And four of them were exteriorization solutions, and one of them was an interiorization solution. They would pick that interiorization solution. Every time, because it's the only technology man has. He doesn't know how to get things out of things. All he can do is obsessively and compulsively put things into things. You get the idea? He doesn't know the reverse vector. Therefore, this entire universe, and particularly Earth at this time, becomes a trap. I assure you that if you have skill in throwing a ball from the A side of a river to the B side of a river, you should also develop the skill of throwing the ball from the B side of the river to the A side of the river. You should be able to throw the ball both ways. If you develop, for instance, facilities for tossing a ball into a basket, if you want that facility to continue and exist and be under your control, you'll also have to develop the facility of throwing the ball outside of the basket. Got it? If you want the facility of writing good stories, you also must continue to have the ability to write bad ones. You see this? Because every time we set up one side of a dichotomy as the only thing which can occur, we put on automatic the other side and just sort of let that go along, you see? And it then becomes the ruling and overmastering item. The one which is not looked at, which has gone beyond the power of choice, is the one which then accedes to control. If you want to be controlled, put something on automatic. If you put something on automatic, remember to have and retain the skill to take it off of automatic. You follow me? Now let me point out a common denominator to all these interiorizations. To continue to accomplish interiorization, it is necessary to overthrow the individual's power of choice. It can be done in no other way. We have to continue to overcome his power of choice. We could confuse him. We could do all sorts of interesting things to him to overcome this power of choice, but the end product of it is we must overcome it. We give a whole land a free vote and then give them two candidates, both of whom are tramps. And we say, now, they're responsible for the whole government of the country. There's Mr. Jones and Mr. Billiken. And you can vote for Jones or Billiken, and this is a free government. Neither one of them even vaguely represent the people. Each one of them represents some section of the more powerful interests, which have nothing to do with the man. We don't interiorize people into the ballot box this way. We interiorize them into a set of chains. See? It's all got to be logical how you have a power of choice, but it doesn't exist. And you'll always see a phony power of choice sitting next to one of these traps. It's quite cute. The recruiting sergeant gives the boy the power of choice of either going into the tank corps or the infantry. Fellow walks up. He doesn't want to be in either one, see? The fellow walks up hoping his heart will be going bup-bidi-dup, bup-bidi-dup, bup. It doesn't. Or it does, and the doctor says, just the sort of a heart we need today. And then this farce ensues, whereby the recruiting sergeant says, now, you sign this set of papers if you go into the tank corps, and this set of papers if you go into the infantry. And now you have complete free choice between which ones you sign. And usually the kid's pretty groggy, and he signs one or the other. And thinks he chose it. See, there almost must be one of these rather shabby choices somewhere along the line. So the power of choice isn't completely overthrown, utterly. Because if you do that, you get unconsciousness. Now, just as I showed you that intention starts at the top as a consideration, self-determined or pan-determined on all dynamics, and at the bottom was a consideration first on all other dynamics except one's own, and then out of sight. So it is true that the power of choice follows this same curve. One at the top has free choice. Such free choice, he hasn't any communication or game. And all the way down at the bottom has no choice at all. But his route down is being coaxed into it by the belief that he does have a choice. People get him to employ his power of choice below the level of magnitude of the actual choice. And so each time he starts down. See how this could be. You have to overthrow an individual's power of choice to interiorize him. Now that is on a consideration level. He has the power to consider A or B. And the A or B he should be able to consider is interiorization or exteriorization. And that is always the choice all the way down. But you see what we do with the infantry and the tank corps. The individual's power of choice of being in the army at all is overthrown, and then they buck him up and hang it on him that he did it on his own responsibility by saying, well, you chose the infantry. You could have chosen the tank corps, you know. Get the idea? Slippy little trick, and then the individual feels, well, he did have some choice in the thing, so his willingness to go on and do something is not completely flat. But every time you overwhelm an individual's power of choice, you overwhelm his willingness to do. It's an inevitable consequence. It might be said that this power of choice is the power of life. Since when an individual loses it, he has no life. And we've made an individual exist along a line and a level where he can no longer choose anything versus anything. And particularly and really, only when he can no longer choose between exteriorization and interiorization, we have then a slave and then at length a non-entity. We have a nothingness which is incapable of choice or intention as the end product. All right, the consideration we see in each case is important. It's important enough that when consideration is omitted, we lose the life or power or willingness of the individual. The only thing a government or an individual can trade upon is this: willingness to live. This is the only thing that anybody can trade upon. This is the only currency there is the willingness to be, to do, to have. And that willingness is an interesting thing, because nobody ever seems to work very hard with the willingness. All they do is work with a stop of willingness. And then they look around and they say, look, our industries are no longer thriving. We have not originated in this country any leaders. We do not have any entrepreneurs. There's nobody getting any ideas. The artists and writers of today are bums. Everything is going to pot. Let's put on some more regulations. Now let's see if we can't bleed out of this country a little more willingness to live by making unlivingness too horrible to contemplate. Boom! There goes the country. Anytime anybody comes along and he tells you that anybody can be forced to work to a degree where the work will actually be done, he's telling you a lie. Nobody can be forced beyond that level. Willingness to do, willingness to be, willingness to have. These are the only currencies. And these depend on power of choice. An individual must have made a self, and all is revealed now, he must have made a self-determined postulate in connection with the situation, or it has no power. An individual who has not made a self-determined postulate with regard to the situation isn't worth having around. I don't care how many shovels you can put in his hand or how many hods of bricks you can apparently make him carry up and down a ramp, that individual is not only not worth having around, he's a terrible liability to the entire community when he has been pulled in and enslaved against his will. He has made no power of choice to get him there. He didn't say, well, I'll be a slave until something better turns up. And as soon as we get enough of these people around, or even really just one of them, any civilization on which we're engaged will eventually blow up, and it'll certainly start going down tone scale, just to the degree that its participants do not have and have not made a postulate to be there. See that? So about the most dangerous thing you could ever engage upon would be to recruit without bringing about or having on the part of those you recruit a power of choice. They have not postulated that they wanted to be there. And if they have not done this, then there is no willingness to be, to do, and to have. And if there's no willingness to be, do, and have, they're interiorized and fighting like mad to get out. It's a very adventurous thing for a state, an army, ever to draft anyone. It's a very adventurous thing for a business to so operate with economic duresses that it traps into its ranks all of its people. See, this is a very adventurous thing. No power of choice. Now, the odd part of it is it doesn't take much postulate of I want to be there, see, to accomplish it and to carry it through somehow. But there must be some. I wouldn't give you a plugged collar button today for any modern army on the face of Earth. I wouldn't use them to police a kiddie car race. Maybe they're very fine troops, and maybe they're not. Who cares? But remember that it was not the Allied pressure that brought about the final downfall of Germany in 1918. Remember, it was the revolution of the German Grand Fleet. Of course, our history books would never tell us this, because American and British pride would suffer too much. But they had a revolution. They drafted one too many guy and held him in the lines just one time too long. You see that? And they were starting to take the Grand Fleet and putting them in soldiers' uniforms and throwing them into line. And the rest of them said no. And they revolted. They locked up their officers. Germany was within a few hours of being struck down by its own troops. We take the history of Rome, and we find that the control of Rome by the Praetorian Guard was an interesting thing. It was very effective until the Praetorian Guard no longer included Romans. And then Rome became the slave of the Praetorian Guards. It's quite interesting, but they took Goths and Visigoths and Vandals and anything else they could get hold of, see, and threw them into that Praetorian Guard. There wasn't a Roman in the midst. And they certainly weren't there by choice. Most of them had been captured on the field of battle. And the next thing you know, we had a Rome enslaved. Thus, a country which recruits its troops solely by conscription will eventually wind up as the prisoner of those troops. So that every trap that pulls in will eventually trap what made the thing pull in, because the postulate and power of choice must come from somewhere. There must be some willingness somewhere to do something, otherwise nothing is going to happen. And the only willingness left is the willingness to interiorize other beings. And a society very often will start to run on this as its total willingness. A willingness to trap, a willingness to interiorize. Now, the willingness to exteriorize then stays on automatic, doesn't it? I don't wish to paint a horrible and gruesome picture just to go over, because I'm just making some examples, trying to let you see them graphically. See, it is true that nations which have fallen have usually fallen to their own armed forces, particularly when conscription was used. It's fantastic, fantastic flashback that one gets. You see the cycle? All we have left, nobody was willing to be troops, but everybody was willing to interiorize troops. The only willingness around then had to do with control or interiorize somebody, or a willingness to interiorize things. And the army itself will start to run on that, and it'll level at its own civil populace. Not a safe thing to have, a drafted army. I dare say a drafted army, by the way, could be defeated with the greatest of ease. There'd probably be nothing to defeating a drafted army. Probably take 5,000 men who were willing to be there and furnish them with weapons that they thought were good, effective weapons, and there'd go about 8 million drafted men. I mean, it'd be horrible. We saw this in the South during the American Civil War, the war between the states, the war of the rebellion, and other Southern names for it. We had one troop of cavalry called the Comanches. I think they numbered 32 men who were responsible by the end of the war for having killed or captured some thousands of Union troops. One day they were riding like mad on their road to Gettysburg, and they'd been ordered up to Gettysburg, and they were going down the road hell for leather, and they all of a sudden came across 1,500 Pennsylvania infantrymen with brand new rifles who had just been grabbed and thrown into service. And they just rode around them, told them to lay down their arms, and they did. They grabbed their own baggage train and stacked the arms and ammunition into the baggage train and sent it south in time to arm a couple of Southern regiments that didn't have any weapons. Told these 1,500 men under the control of their own officers to march south till they came to such and such a place and let them go. When they got back after Gettysburg, the 1,500 men had marched south and were now neatly imprisoned. This sort of thing happens wherever you have a willing army versus an unwilling one. Weird and great oddities occur this way. But let me show you the mechanism. The only willingness there on the part of the army that has been conscripted or pulled in against a choice, the only willingness which remains is a willingness to entrap. It'll even entrap itself. This army of 1,500 men, it's quite a few men, by the way, walks out and puts itself in the stockade very nicely and neatly, see? You know, that's an incredible thing to have happen. 32 cavalrymen did that. They didn't even send an escort with these men, you understand? They said, you walk south and walk into the stockade. And the guys did. You take your arms and ammunition and deliver them over to that quartermaster. They did. Must be something psychotic here, huh? Well, the power of choice left is only this power, the power to interiorize. There's no desire on their own part to be there, but there would be then a residual desire to put something into things, to interiorize things. You follow me? And that is the surviving postulate. Out of power of choice, the power to consider, to be willing to do this, to have that, to be this or that, when that gets broken down, this power of choice, it turns into to interiorize as the decision. You'll see this work out someday in a pre-clear. All right, and we take a pre-clear. He's a Thetan. Once upon a time, he saw this body walking down the road. We won't worry about how the body got there, but he saw this body walking down the road, and he says, ha, 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 ha. This interesting, cute gimmick. I think I'll do so-and-so with that. And he did. Did this and that. He made a prisoner out of it, didn't he? He made a slave out of it. And then he finally walks it into a place where it won't walk out again right away, so he can have it. You understand? He invents ways to put it to sleep so he can go roaming around the countryside while it's asleep. He does all sorts of things. We don't have to go into these things, but all he's doing is entrapping under complete control, making a slave out of a body. Body didn't express any willingness to be there at all. It didn't know why it was walking down along the road that way. And out of this, what do we get? We get in the body the one expressed choice, which is a desire to interiorize something. You can say that when a thing has not asked to be there, it will then residually have left the desire to interiorize something. See, that is the expressed intention. It has lost, if you get it on the overt act motivator sequence, it has lost. The only remaining life in its vicinity is interiorized. See, it says itself, interiorized, control, enslaved. Now, we could get this much more easily if we said the thing comes along and entraps the body, and the body then entraps the thing. See, the mechanics. The mechanics of the thing. But we should be wary of stating it this easily in terms of mechanics, because that isn't exactly what happens. You got to keep this in the realm of considerations to understand it, and that is its power of choice. That the ability to consider, these two things are synonymous terms, the ability to make considerations is what has been trapped. And when a person finds himself a slave or in something that he didn't ask to be in, he will then, usually, express activity of interiorized things. See? Desire to go into, overcome, brings about desire to make things go into and overcome them. You follow me? Now, where do we find any kind of a mechanism anywhere which is desire to get out of? Where does this mechanism occur? How would it occur? Well, of course, anything that is put perforce into something that it didn't want to go into will make the postulate want to get out of. And what if that postulate was a consistent failure? I want to get out of this. How many times have we heard men in the army say this? And if they got out of it, what would happen to them? They'd be shot and everything else that happened to them. I mean, they'd get court-martialed, and their civilian life would be ruined, and they'd go to prison, and all kinds of horrible things that happened to them, see? If they suddenly broke free and walked away. So that is a punished action, and it comes about that when the desire to get out of is sufficiently overcome, that just getting out of something brings about the feeling that one must probably be punished. And thus we get a pre-clear. We say, be 3 feet back of your head. He's 3 feet back of his head, and he knows now he's going to be punished. And he feels very griefy, and he'll go back into the body again. He knows better. Get the idea? Overt act motivator sequence. The body went on a free will of its own. It went into a backflip or did something embarrassing. You know? Big thing. And what did he do to it? He punished it. Overt act motivator sequence. But that doesn't mean really overt act motivator sequence. It means when the total intention present, save one, is to go into, this one with the intention get out of will be overcome by the general agreement. And the general agreement will swamp him. Thus we say to a pre-clear, be 3 feet back of your head. What happens to him? The least thing he'll feel very often is that somebody's after him. Nothing's going to happen to him. He should have some penalty attached to this, so one of the things he does is not see, not hear, not look at the room, really. Look at facsimiles of the room. We don't care how mechanical all this is. These mechanics are well understood to us. But what is the consideration above these mechanics? The consideration is, if I get out of this, nobody else wants me out of this, or out of anything. Therefore, I must be running counter to the general opinion and agreement, and therefore, I will merit punishment. Therefore, I'd better punish myself and show people I'm not really out of this. So he goes through all kinds of things. He cut on past deaths and various mechanical patterns of one kind or another will be turned on. We have difficulty keeping him outside, and he'll go around for a few days and he'll feel guilty about this thing, or all of a sudden there'll be a threat to the body of one kind or another, and he'll say, yeah, I knew they were going to punish me one way or the other, now they're going to take my body away. And it's just kind of an instinctive thing, and pongo, he's back in. See, it's a very simple mechanism, actually. He believes he ought to be in. That's the only thing he believes. And you've said be out. Now, this person's ability, his freedom, his power of choice, and all these other matters actually depend on his being able to interiorize or exteriorize at will. If he can interiorize or exteriorize at will, in and out of anything, then his control of his environment is an assured thing. An individual who can walk in and out of the army at will. The army would really be upset about this fellow. Thus we get the armies having to make all sorts of odd concessions to militia forces that aren't signed up really at all, you know. They just walked in, they decided they'd have a fight for a while. They're liable to go home at any minute. You'd have to have a succession of victories, or you'd have to have some chow, or you'd have to have something around there, or you'd have to have a continued fidelity of cause. You see, the cause they're fighting for must be faithful to, and so forth, in order to keep them there at all, because they can wander in and out all the time. So they actually are the determining factors as to whether or not the battle will be fought. Are they willing to fight this battle? Are they unwilling to fight this battle? Usually the men are pretty sure that when a battle is to be fought, they have some kind of an idea who's going to win. And if they think that they can't win, they're liable to say, oh, no, let's not fight this battle. Some schoolbook general is tearing his wig to pieces, you know. Tisn't some nice, cool stunt, you know. There's nobody criticizing his activities at all in a conscripted army, which is why he likes them. They're the most dangerous thing to have around you ever heard of, but generals love them. The power of choice totally overcome. Nobody doing any thinking around here. General headquarters can say, well, now, all men will now swim the Mediterranean in full equipment and immediately launch an attack upon the Pyrenees. The men will at least have to wade up until the water's over their heads. But you wouldn't be able to do that in an army there by the power of choice. So you just wouldn't be able to do that. Look at a preclear. As a Thetan, his power of choice has been so thoroughly overcome one way or the other that he knows he'll have to do it, but he's not able to. This is his continued opinion. He'll have to do it, but he's not able to. And these two things just go hand in hand. To a point where everything he has to do, he knows he can't do. You get that? That would just be a bing-bing reaction. Well, let's see, I have to walk down to the corner. I know I can't walk down to the corner. Well, I've got to walk down to the corner somehow or another. The body starts caving in. Various things start happening. He'll impede himself so that he can't walk down to the corner. He'll say, I'm tired. He'll say, I have no real purpose in going down the corner. It can wait till tomorrow, the idea. But I've got to go down to the corner. But I can't go down to the corner. Well, the best thing to do is develop a somatic in my right leg. Well, that'll fix me. You can almost hear this guy chattering to himself. See, when he's lost his power of choice, the various factors he is considering are always countered with must entrap. See, any outward motion is accompanied by the self-statement must entrap. And we get these chaps around who call it in self-invalidation. And it's not self-invalidation, it's self-entrapment. They were there without power of choice, so therefore they're going to put themselves there without power of choice. You get the idea? Now, it can go that far and get that bad to where a person will walk up and put himself in jail. See, it can get that bad. A person isn't much good to anybody when it's that bad. Now, we in Scientology can overcome these factors. It's not too difficult to overcome such factors. Why? Because we know how to exteriorize and interiorize. This is very fascinating. Nobody else ever knew how to exteriorize. You say, well, an army knew how to exteriorize after a guy had been there for a certain length of time. They signed the discharge papers and they went away. The army knows, huh? Well, then why does the army put him in the reserve? See? Doesn't let him out really at all. Body dies, that lets the thetan out, doesn't it? So you come back and get in another body. See? They just don't have any idea of totally exteriorizing anything. Every exteriorization is with tremendous reservations. When you go to the motion picture theater, the motion picture theater has fixed it up, it thinks, it hopes, so that it has re-interiorized you next Friday. When love, love, love will now be played. See? It hopes it's done this. You're never permitted to walk away. All of life is so sold on this that it insists that if you do walk away, you at least have a memory. So the individual then insists that he have a memory. If an individual is insisting to himself that he have a memory, let's take this mechanism and watch it work now. If he insists to himself that he have a memory, then we must conclude that his power of choice about having memories has somewhere been thoroughly overcome. And this then being the case, he himself continues to fail to exteriorize. He no longer exteriorizes from events. Totally, he takes along a memory of them. You follow me? Well, there's no reason why he should have a solid memory, certainly. His power of choice has really been overcome. If he ought to have solid memories that pop up here and pop up there, that means he's never going to get out of anything. His backtrack, he didn't leave 18 lives ago or 85 lives ago. He didn't leave anything on the track at all. It's all there one way or the other in picture form. See, he's got to come back and watch the show next Friday. Get the idea? So, this only occurs when his own power of choice has been overcome thoroughly on the subject of memory. After that, he will continue to interiorize. See? Power of choice overcome, then he continues to interiorize. You got the idea? Man has not learned the art of exteriorization, but he has learned the art of interiorization very, very well. So much so that he practices it obsessively and compulsively. He never seems to be able, at any time, to set anybody free. He's lost the art of doing so. So much so that an auditor's mistakes are usually just hangovers of these interiorizations. Gets the pre-clear 5 feet back of his head, and the auditor doesn't know it, but his dropping the ashtray at that instant and other activities engaged upon, breaks of two-way communication, a sudden inability to do this or that, a sudden inability to remember the right things to do, he's just saying, well, let's kind of interiorize him again. Let's get him out here 5 feet back of his head, and then let's kind of interiorize him a little bit, too. He's liable to make blunders one way or the other. If he really doesn't want the person to go away, if he doesn't want to lose this person in any way, he's liable to forget the whole rule book and do all sorts of wild things. If he knows the auditor's code well, he'll take two or three items of it and just turn them upside down. He really doesn't want to lose this person. You get the idea? Let's say some wife is processing her husband. I swear to Pete, you just never see the number of boo-boos which occur. Why? Because they don't want the marriage to break up. Well, as long as the marriage is being engaged upon by power of choice on both sides, it'll be a fairly successful marriage. But if the choice to be there of either party has been ferociously overcome, you will have the other party compulsively So you'll have this party compulsively interiorizing the other members and himself into the marriage. Get the idea? If somebody was persuaded against his or her will or wish to marry utterly and completely, I'm going to give you two bits and a collar button for the marriage, because all that's going to happen is that person is now going to dramatize, must interiorize. See? Overcome choice, must interiorize. That's the way it kind of works. Well, if we didn't know the anatomies of this today, we'd be in a bad way. We know that if we exteriorize somebody, you can patch up the body and do all sorts of things. And if we can't exteriorize somebody, we'll know that our ability to do something for them is rather limited. So therefore, we ought to know very, very well the techniques of exteriorization. The techniques of exteriorization are not a bunch of mechanical techniques. It's actually rehabilitating the individual's power of choice. That would be the highest level of process to lead to an exteriorization. You see me? See this, huh? If you just rehabilitated his ability to choose and his power of choice, he would then be able to exteriorize. I mean, this is an open and shut proposition. Got it? Now, the mechanics of interiorization are today also understood. An individual interiorizes into the unknown. He is a knowing thing. Therefore, he interiorizes into the unknowing thing. Dichotomy. First and second postulate. Native state, potentially knows. First postulate, I don't know. Second postulate, I know something. It's very interesting, but the power postulate there is, I don't know. Which is one of the more fantastic things. It is true that it is. It's the power postulate. It shuts off his own abilities. So the native state could be said to do a skid into the first postulate. Into a total I don't know. Now you see how that could be? So we get this great oddity. We take anything that is totally unknown or big secrets. We say it is totally unknown, but we say it exists. That's enough. Now we have made a postulated unknownness. Some awareness of this unknownness must occur in order to do an interiorization into it. But the thetan will skid into that area of unknownness. We got it? All you have to do to skid people into things is to make them aware of the unknownness in the thing. And you'll skid people into them. Sounds odd, doesn't it? Well, why is this? Because it's only in the presence of unknownness that an individual cannot at once exercise the power of choice. He feels he has nothing on which to exercise it. He must have some data, some observation, someone, and he fails to exercise the power of choice in the presence of unknownness. And it's as simple as that. He just fails to exercise the power of choice in the presence of unknownness, and so goes on into it. You follow that? The power of choice, ability of, and ability in, flips a person out of anything or into anything. See? No power of choice puts them into things. It's just as simple as that. So therefore, he runs into an area of unknownness about which he has no knowledge except that it exists. Remember, though, he has to have the knowledge that it exists. See? And he will wait with his power of choice long enough to cause a terminal snap with it. See, he'll say, well, now, I don't know whether that's bad or a good snap. Get the idea? It isn't, I want this position or I want that position, or this position is habitable and that position isn't habitable. Nothing like this at all. It's unknown. And he says, what's that? Snap. See this? Now, the unknownness of the bank. Now, the engram bank makes a person go snap into it. He exercises no power of choice over unknownness. So, therefore, he snaps into the unknown parts of it and stays there looking at the known parts of it, trying to make up his mind if he should or should not be there. Get the idea? He goes on inspecting the knownnesses from the first postulate position of I don't know. When his power of choice goes, when he says I don't know, he's at it. The idea, he says, well, I don't know. Snap. He doesn't exercise a power of choice, and therefore he gets interiorization. What I've been trying to show you here is a little bit difficult to grasp this for the excellent reason that you're above the realm of logic. And I tried to make it fairly clear to you that it was above the realm of logic, because I said we could make some neat concatenations of gradient scales around here and button up all of life gorgeously with interiorization and exteriorization, you see. But it would just be logical embroidery. When we're into native state, first postulate, second postulate, we're in the unfortunate situation of being above the borderline of logic. But you can see this by example, can't you? Individual loses power of choice, pang, he's into it. See, it would exert a pull on him. See that? Now, a vast public can be delivered into the hands of any club, cult, or otherwise. As long as the public knows just one thing about it, that it is a secret society. The idea? And it is unsuccessful to the degree that it delineates its goals. See, if its idea was to interiorize everybody into its ranks, then it would never make its goals known. Got the idea? And the public would simply come in, swish, 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 swish. Be fabulous. If you had something sitting up there which was the secret of all secret sanctuaries, but there was nothing in it at all. Reference Lord Dunsany's story, The Day the Monastery Fell. Or whatever it was, title. Gorgeous story. It's simply the fellow walked along and pulled the curtains aside and there was nothing there. Of course, the monastery fell that day. But if you just rigged up something like this, the society would come in on it. They would not be able to establish whether it was bad or good and would have lost their power of choice concerning it because it never published its goals. Now, you see at once that this doesn't happen to mirror our particular goals, because we do delineate our goals. This subject and organization is self-untrapping. Probably the first one that's ever come along. But I wonder if you realize that people like the Scapa Flow Diuretic and other magazines which stand around and hammer and pound about how this way and that way and so forth that Ron is or the Hazi is or the auditors are, or the particular auditors are and that sort of thing. They just stand around and hammer and talk about it and throw big doubt up in the air, see? They've created an unknownness, and they're practically the only people that are creating unknownnesses in the United States are here. And they snap public to us. Snap, 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 snap. Probably to have no success at all if it hadn't been for the other campaign. Campaign going on to prove that we were no good at all. Actually, we owe them all a debt of thanks. We should send them some money. We should send them some small contributions so they'd carry on with this good work. I originally started Dianetics. I was going to hire three preachers to do nothing but go on local radio stations and raise hell with Dianetics. You know, make it a big unknownness, because here we are, obviously, representing forces of good. We're doing our job as best we can in a physical universe. And it's not very good sometimes, but it's still the best we can at the time. And somebody's standing off postulating unknownnesses about what we're doing, because it's in conflict with what we're apparently doing. They create an unknownness, destroy the public ability to say, I know or consider, and the public comes in, snap, 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 see? Only we really don't want that kind of public, but they're the best recruiting agents that we have. We ought to have 10 more magazines like that. We'd have thousands of people, and then we could teach them and send them on their way. Man knows lots of mechanisms on how to entrap. He knows few on how to exteriorize. We, fortunately, know how to exteriorize. Thank you.